providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Now, Mark, it's been a couple of weeks since we last chatted with you. And first and foremost, let's take a step back and just discuss all this U.S. economic data that has come out that has tended to lean more on the more optimistic side of things. And optimistic being retail sales were strong, the jobs data was quite strong, PPI and CPI numbers did show a bit of a slowdown in inflation, but inflation is still, I think, relatively higher than a lot of the central banks, especially the Fed, want it to be. This has gone hand in hand with people, I think, adjusting a little bit of their rate hiking expectations on the side that the Fed will keep on hiking rates, albeit most likely just 25 basis points moving forward. Mark, your takeaway from all this strong U.S. economic data and how it's now playing into a bit of a shift in expectations for investors.
Yeah, you're right. You know, there's been a string of strong economic data, strong probably understate the case. I mean, more than a half a million jobs grown in January. And then that retail sales report we saw earlier this week up 3%, blowing away expectations. We saw another jump in manufacturing output. And for the first time in several months, we're seeing a rise in housing permits. Housing market's still under a lot of pressure, but this is the first glimmer of hope that maybe those lower interest rates for mortgages are beginning to filter through. We'll see that next week probably with the existing home sales. But so this back to data, I think that, you know, the market had been looking for weaker data. And especially, you know, in November and December, we saw retail sales fall roughly 1% a month. We saw a manufacturing output fall roughly 1% a month, November and December. And so then we get this big bounce back. And I think that the market, that pendulum of market sentiment previously did not think that we'd get to 5% on Fed funds. And now it's saying that maybe 5.25, maybe even above there. Several banks are talking about 5.5. And I saw some talking about 6%. And so I think that we have to be careful. Market sentiment is such a fickle thing. You know, it reminds me of late last September when sterling was near its record lows, 103.5, and people were talking about the UK as an emerging market economy. The Economist did an article talking about brittle. And I think at the time I recognized that as just an extreme swing in sentiment. And I think the same thing's happening now. The market basically got caught leaning a bit the wrong way. And it's had to, it's had such a dramatic effect. And we see this, I'll give you an example of the 2-year US yield. Before those jobs number, the 2-year yield was near 4%. And we got up to 4.71 today, is reflecting that just what a dramatic swing we've had in expectations. And I think that the market's overdoing it. I just don't think that we should expect the data to repeat itself. And I think that, you know, we've already seen that one of the Federal Reserve presidents, Barkin, lay up the same point that he's not putting much stock in this last batch of data because it was so distorted. Seasonal effects. You know, we've had since COVID, we had seasonal adjustment problems for January for retail sales. The jobs number was also influenced methodological changes as well as seasonal adjustments. And so we really need a clean batch of data, and we're going to get that in the coming weeks. And for me, I think that there's some data. And what I'm looking at is the poor Philadelphia Fed survey for the month of February. And the other number that I'm putting, that I think that we should keep in mind, though it's a bit old school and people don't pay much attention to it anymore, leading economic indicators. They have fallen every month since last February. They're down, so that's through January of this year, which we just got today. In the second half of last year, it was down about 7.5% year over year. So I think that in some ways, this really bring this, what, given the strong economic data to your question, is what does this mean about the recession that so many people thought was inevitable? And I think that people are still looking at the inversion of the yield curve, no matter which part of it you want to look at. They're looking at money supply, M2, that's not just growing slowly, but actually contracting. And so I think that the economists have really just deferred the economic downturn to the second and third quarters of this year. And the market sort of, I think the market traders exaggerating the importance of this January super strong economic data.
Yeah, Mark, you summed it up well there with the sentiment being so fickle, and people inherently, investors and even the financial media has a ton of recency bias. Whatever happened most recently, they extrapolate it out into the future. So all these good economic reports, they extrapolate them out perpetua. And last year, all we heard was, like your point is, the recession's coming and everything is bad, and all these numbers that were just good were bad last year. But Mark, we're in a weird world where good news is bad and bad news is good. We're in an upside down world. So when all this good data came out, everybody did expect the Fed to keep hiking further, and that has spiked the dollar, and that has given the 10-year a little boost, which has pressured the rest of the markets. Do you think we're back in that environment again, where with the people expecting the Fed to keep hiking longer and higher, that we're going to see the dollar and rates keep pushing higher and punish the rest of the sectors?
Well, I do think that the dollar has the dollar bounce has brought the many of the foreign currencies into some key chart points. 106 in the euro, 135 in the dollar yen. Sterling made a new low today, 119.15, and the low for the year is 118.5 or 118.60, that kind of area. Aussie and Kiwi have been punished as well, and so maybe we freed some support. But my sense is that what's it going to take to reverse this fickle sentiment? And I'm afraid that we're not going to have anything big on the calendar until March 10th. And that's when the next batch of US jobs data comes out. And so for me, the risk then is that if we go through 106 in the euro, we can go down to 104.5, 105. Dollar yen, I've been looking for this 135. We saw it today, but we couldn't stay above it. But if we do, I think we go maybe 137, and beyond that, 139.50, 140 against possible if U.S. rates continue to back up. So I am concerned that we've gotten to some interesting chart points, and maybe we can consolidate until we can shake this out, and maybe the dollar is still vulnerable to the upside. And I say vulnerable because you look at the futures market and the non-commercials, the speculators in the futures market have a very significant long euro position coming into this week's action. And so I worry that market positioning is a big deal here. In the stock market, again, we're going through some level. We can't sustain even modest upticks. I think almost everybody I talk to is bearish stocks, partly on the back of the Fed, partly on the back of an earnings slowdown. And so I do think we're in a position where if we get some weak economic data, the market can have, say, the non-farm payrolls for this month soften a bit. We get that report in March 10th, and then I think we can resume the dollars. What I think is the dollar's high is in place last September and October, and this is primarily a correction, as violent as it might be.
So, Mark, if you're hearing people more bearish on the markets, we've also heard the argument that people were bullish on these markets. And if we take into account that the large rate hikes are more behind us, they all happened last year, is this just setting up for currencies, markets, pretty much everything to be more or less range bound, choppy this year?
Yeah, I don't know about this year. I don't even know what I'm eating for dinner tonight. But I do see like oil prices, copper, a lot of these forward-looking like commodities that are used for construction, for industrial production, lumber. I still think that the problem is going to be sustaining demand. And I know that retail sales was a monster number, 3% in the U.S. And I think this is the challenge. I think that a lot of people and economists, policymakers are having. We have a relatively, by almost any metric, strong labor market. It's not just in the United States, Europe, the UK, Canada, the Bank of Governor from the RBA, from the Reserve Bank of Australia, even though they just had a soft jobs number, he's still saying how strong the labor market is. And I think so. Back early in my career, people did not think you can have a weak economy and inflation. Yet we know now we could have stagnation, stagflation. And I think that now the sort of the orthodox thinking is that you can't have an economic downturn when the labor market's so strong. And yet, think about what happened. First half of last year, the US economy contracted. The British economy, the Bank of England itself says it's going to contract for the next 5 quarters. And they've got a strong labor market. And so I think this is what we're re really wrestling with. It's a problem with our mindset, our thinking about how economics works and the relative role of the labor market. I think the same thing about CPI, inflation. You look at the price of the goods that we buy, computer, the cell phone, even a refrigerator, dishwasher, how much labor costs are really in there? I'll tell you a quick story. Earlier in my career, I called on General Motors, and I was given my own political leanings. I said to them, why are you crushing labor so much? And I go, you know, I see in their reports they can make a car in less than 20 man hours, and assume that there's about $100 an hour that they pay their workers, counting benefits and everything. And I said, so you can, the labor costs in a car, including the legacy costs of past pensions, might be $2,000. And yet at the time, I thought I was paying $35,000 to $40,000 for a car. I said, what's going on here? Doesn't make sense to me. And he said to me, that me as an economist, think about it the wrong way. He said, think about it as a business person. He says, we're lucky to make $150 per car. We can't control the price of capital. You bankers do that. We can't control the price of raw materials. That's out of our hands. The only thing we can control is labor. And if we can get another $50 from labor, we just increase our profits by 30%. So I think that's the mentality. It's not that labor is driving inflation. And I think you see this with, you know, you look at U.S. corporate earnings during COVID. They're record levels. And I think that now it's like the things are normalizing and those super profits are slowing down considerably.
Well, Mark, I know you also follow the currency markets very closely. You mentioned a couple of things already in this call, but one of the things that was the story of last year was really the U.S. dollar gaining on almost all currencies for most of the year until the Bank of England had that issue where they had to kind of backpedal and backstop their markets. And so we saw that really be the top of the dollar when the pound started rallying versus the dollar. And then right after that, the Bank of Japan had two different issues where they had to backstop their bond yields and their markets, their currency, the yen. And those started, you know, catching fire and moving up versus the dollar. And then the ECB got in the mix as the biggest weighting in the dollar basket. Well, the inverse seems to be happening lately, where the dollar was down at 100.82 just not too long ago. And that had given everything, the markets, the commodities, everything a boost. And now you're starting to see other central banks and other countries do things where, like the ECB, Lagarde came out and tanked the euro. And so that gave the dollar a boost. And now we're seeing the Bank of Japan getting in the mix again with a new member. How much do you think that some of these moves that we see in the markets are really a response to all these currency gyrations?
Yes, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, if you have a basket of international bonds, the currency volatility is such it could be 2/3 of your total return. And if you have a basket of international equities, the currency could be 1/3 of your return. But more generally, I think that I know it sounds very simplistic, but I think that sort of a rule of thumb, especially if you're not day trade the markets, there's a risk on and risk off, like switch. And when risk off, the first thing you think of is stocks sell off. And if stocks sell off, there's a very strong correlation, for example, between the, say, the dollar block currencies and the Scandis, Norway and Sweden, and the stock market. I'd say that there's a very strong correlation between, you know, it broke down, but it's coming back, between the yen, the dollar-yen exchange rate, and the 10-year yield, which is also partly a function of the risk appetites. So I think for me, when I the first thing I look at in the morning is trying to see, is it a risk on day or a risk off day? And sometimes, especially for people who are trying to trade intraday, that sometimes large moves in Asia and Europe get faded in North America or vice versa. We have a strong stock market close and you think Asia follows suit, but instead they don't. And so I think that the currency market, it is the biggest of the capital markets, and it's a key part of the return that international investors get. But oftentimes, I really think it's just a reflection of the risk-off, risk-on impulses coming from other markets, especially the equity market, which seems to be the clue for a lot of people.
So, Mark, before we get you out of here, since we talk so much about the Fed, there's other central banks that we should consider. And quite frankly, the next Fed meeting is still a ways off, I believe a little over a month off. What else are you watching? Other central banks that could actually dictate market moves and change investors' expectations?
Well, you know, there's nothing like the Federal Reserve. But next week, I think we'll be watching the BOJ officials testifying before their parliament and get some clues about what the BOJ does. The first meeting of the new governor will be around April 10th. And the market's pricing in as if at his first meeting, he's going to raise interest rates. It's possible. You might remember that when Draghi took over the ECB, that's what he did. raise rates at his first meeting. I don't think that's very sort of, say, Japanese-like. I think instead, like I say, a review policy, and then maybe come up with a game plan on how to exit when needed, when appropriate. Another central bank that meets next week is the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. And it's not, even though they were the first to come up with a 2% inflation target, I wouldn't say that they are key to the global capital markets. But an interesting development is that the market was pricing in a 50 basis point hike by the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. And then they were hit with a cyclone that just devastated the economy. And so I think that it makes it a much difficult, much more difficult call of what New Zealand's going to do. The market scaled back to 25 basis points, excuse me, scaled back from 50 basis points to 25. And this week, the New Zealand dollar is really among the weakest of the currencies. The yen is the weakest over the past 5 days, but New Zealand is not far behind it as the second weakest of the major currencies. Two other reports to keep an eye on for next week. One is they will begin the new week with the PMI, the flash PMIs. And, many of the countries, well, I should say many of them, there's really a split between countries like the US, the UK, Australia, where the composite's still below 50. And then you've got Japan and the Eurozone, where the composite's above 50. So it'll be kind of interesting to see if that can continue. And the other thing is later next week, we'll get the PCE deflator in the US. It's true that the CPI has stolen most of its thunder, but the PCE deflator still is important because that's what the Fed targets. That comes out at the end of next week.
All right, Mark, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you very much for your time. As always, fun to go through the economic data and also discuss how currencies are moving, because those are biggest markets in the world, and we can see some of the shifts that happen. Again, a lot predicated on what central banks are doing and the data that comes out of some of the other countries. Still sounds like we're in for a bit of a choppy year, or at least choppy short-term time frame here, as markets try to figure out just where we're going and where the economies around the world are going. Mark, thank you as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat in a couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.